Welcome. You are listening to the Mantic Universe podcast. I'm Chris, and as ever, I'm joined by my good friend Clem.
Hi, everybody.
And we're very lucky to be joined today by Paige Neo of Newbie Dice.
Hey, Chris and Clem. Good to be here.
We finally have someone on the pod who's actually good at Kings of War. Speaking
of bad guy is War. Good at Kings of War too.
In our
and
own
both
way.
Of you, of course.
And we're joined, very, very happy to have him, Tom King, friend of the pod, who's joined us because he's asked us the question, what impact do we think the old world will have on Kings of War? So, hey, Tom, and thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Hi, everyone.
So, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. The Mantic Web Store discount code is UNIVERSE15. It's one per customer, so please fill up your basket. Also want to give a shout out to Baron of Dice. They make great dice. Don't forget the MUP 5% discount code. They're, you know, the Rolls Royce of dice. And I also love Game Match EU, who make probably my favorite pre-painted sci-fi post-apocalyptic terrain. So get yourself over to their website and put in the code MUP11 to get an 11% discount. And also a quick shout out that the Name Our Mascot, our new mascots competition is going on our Facebook group. So please join in. And keep posted. We're going to do a Christmas charity type painting thing with Scott from Palette of War. So that's really excited. We haven't quite planned it out yet, but it's going to be a thing. So everyone keep listening for announcements. Let's just present our guest then. So Paige, obviously you're very internet famous, but maybe you can just give yourself a quick introduction.
Sure. So I'm Paige. I'm a Kings of War player in Singapore, small little country in Asia. And so I've created a YouTube channel called Newbie Dice. So my purpose of creating the channel was to create battle reports that I myself like to see, which are educational. When I watch a battle report, I get to learn how to play the game better. And my goal is to always keep the battle reports as short as I can. I used to always do it under 20 minutes. Now it's been dragging on to 30 to 40 minutes, but if you watch it at a 1.5 times or double speed, that will still keep it pretty short. Yeah, so that was my main drive. And of course, I've also started a podcast as well called Newbie Dice Podcast. Yep, that's basically it.
Dear listener, if you actually want to know about the game and to get good at the game, that is very much the podcast for you. For everything MUP does, we definitely don't manage that. So, putting it out there, Clem. Super.
No, you're completely right. I mean, I love listening to your episodes because it is definitely a different type of content, but it's interesting to see also a different perspective on the game. And I always learn some things when I listen to it. So sometimes like, no, it's wrong. I disagree with this. But that makes for great content. So Thanks for making it. And we're super happy to have you here today.
Yes, thank you so much. So yeah, my drive is always to provide competitive gaming insights because I'm quite a competitive gamer myself. So that's been the main focus of my channels.
Fantastic. And Tom, you know, we're all here today because you asked the question on the Facebook group. And maybe you could just give us a quick little intro.
So myself, yeah, I'm a Kings of War player from Ireland. So I'm currently in Ashburn, just outside Dublin. Basically play one or two competitions a year. Small scene over here. So that's about it. That's all I have to bring to the table. I've been playing since the kind of beta version of Kings of War second edition. So since 2015.
Fantastic, buddy. And of course, we met, well, I met Kevin a couple of years ago in Cardiff at Clash of Kings. I'm not sure if you were there for that. But
I was there for that as well.
Oh, yeah. You were there. Oh, what a shame I didn't get to meet you properly. And then obviously we met in Nottingham recently. And lovely, lovely to meet you. Really cool.
And I've heard there's a potential tournament in Ireland.
Yeah.
We also don't know exactly how that's going to happen. Sounds cool.
Stay on the call, Clem. We're having a chat about that later after this episode of MUP Shorts. So fantastic. Oh, and I just want to say, Tom, as well, that your Goblin army is stunning. Absolutely beautiful. You should be very proud of
Thanks
yourself.
Thank you very much.
For I many appreciate things, that. But also for painting goblins.
That took long enough, so it's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but I mean, you must have been so proud, though. I mean, there was it was a room full of amazingly painted stuff. I mean, and me and Clem were also there. But, it must have felt good, though, right?
Yeah, well, it felt good to get it finished. So that was my first all Mantic army. So I'd been working on that for the guts of a year. So I decided I was going to bring an all Mantic army. And somehow I picked a Horde army. I don't know how, but it worked out well in the end. Yeah, I was happy with the end result.
Fantastic. And I think you've challenged me for Clash of Kings next year. So I'll get my teeth kicked in by that army or by a different army.
It'll be that army. It might be a slightly different version. You know, after watching a few episodes of Newbie Dice, I might be bringing some new toys to the table.
Oh, goodness. Good luck, Chris. Fantastic. And so, dear listener, we're here for this MUP episode of MUP Shorts. Because honestly, I think it's very interesting. I think this is a really interesting topic to cover. And it's the first one that's, because to be fair, the MUP gang, we're very laid back, cheerful types, happy go lucky. But it was the first time we had a topic where someone actually said, should we be doing this? Should we be talking about the elephant in the room? But I think, I don't, as sort of Mantic players, I don't think it does us any good to not discuss these things. I mean, obviously, this thing is going to happen. So I think it makes sense for us just to get ahead of it and have a little chat. And who knows, we're just wildly speculating. We know very little at this point. So let's start by, let's look at the elephant.
Also, Chris, the other thing is neither you nor me were really Fantasy Battle big fanboys. So I think we have kind of an open, sure. For some people, it might be a bit more of a difficult topic. But you and me, I think we're also kind of like, okay. Anyway, I didn't want
that's
to.
We're jumping ahead, but that is a very good point, Clem. So let's talk about the old world and what the old world is. So this is, guys, please feel free to jump in. Warhammer Fantasy Battles, it was the old rank and flank Warhammer game that was blown up by Games Workshop when they realized it wasn't profitable enough. If you're going to have shareholders, you've got to make money. So I think in 2016, I've written, and I think it's right, they literally blew it up and created their Age of Sigmar game.
Small correction from the editor. It was 2015, but please continue, Chris.
Which is, individually based models, much more like their far more profitable 40K game, right? Clem?
No, I saw something funny from Rick Priestley, so the guy who wrote the very first rules, and he explained where Warhammer Fantasy Battle came from. It's like, well, we were making models for D&D players, but you don't need that many models for when you play D&D, and we wanted to sell more models, and so we came up with some rules where you actually need more models. And so it's kind of the joke always that it grew and grew and grew to the point of needing a shit ton of models to get started. And I think they kind of struggled to get new people into the game. And that's why they blew up the game, I think. Paige?
Most famous, of course, for writing the rules to Gates of Antares. Sorry, Paige, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I've only played 8th edition, but before coming on this podcast, I did read through some of the old world articles, and GW did mention that the 1st and 2nd edition of Warhammer were mainly designed around D&D. Only in 3rd edition was it a mass battle game. So, there's that.
Interesting. So, what happened? So, we've got an idea of what the old world was. I think in terms of rules, I mean, I've read the rules. I bought the rules on eBay. I can't remember which edition, a while ago. And I was surprised just how sort of clunky it was. It's in terms of rules, I think it's a long way away from Kings of War, right? But when the old world was blown up, I think there were probably two things that came out of it. One was sort of Kings of War, and the other one was Ninth Age, which was a sort of fan-led.
I mean, Kings of War was already there, but people who played Warhammer Fantasy Battle had basically two options. Either jump across and go play Kings of War, like take the miniatures and use these new rules and play this. Or I think some people created the Ninth Age, which is basically a pun about the ninth edition of Fantasy Battle made by the community.
Paige, go for it, buddy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just these two games, right? People who were ex Warhammer players, and if they are not inclined to just playing ranks and flanks games, they could go into many other games. I myself, I went into War Machine and Hordes. That was just before the old world blew up. And like our best player in Singapore, he went into X-Wing and with a few other players. So yeah, there's a lot of split of a lot of players since the old world exploded.
Ah, great point, Paige, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. So did any of us actually play Warhammer? You know, the old world, the old game, any of the editions?
Yes.
Paige, yes. Clem,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, 1 year of 8th edition.
Tom, did you play?
I played it. 5th edition was the first edition I played. So when I was in college, I used to work for Games Workshop, just in their Dublin store. So I moved on. We originally started playing D&D, and then for the duration that I was in college, I worked in the store and played 5th edition, and then was out of it for about 10 years and came back at 8th edition about 2011 and played that right up till 2015, till they blew up the old world. And that's where I found Kings of War. So I would have found that right at the end of 8th edition. But by that stage, I wasn't really happy with the game. I found the game, like you said, quite clunky. And there were certain things about it, you know, like, I don't know, I always give this example when talking about the Warhammer. I remember the last kind of game of Warhammer I played, I had set a trap just with a bit of chaff, and I had a unit was charged on all sides. My units had charged an enemy unit on all sides, and because they were witch elves, they attacked first and killed all my guys. I didn't even get a chance to attack back. It just didn't feel right. And then it was a great kind of breath of fresh air to play Kings, where if you pull that off, you know, you're probably going to win the game there, you know. So that was my experience with the old world.
Paige, go for it, buddy.
Yeah, adding on to that, Tom. So Fred, Giant Dwarf Fred, he mentioned in his podcast before that, you know, he was trying to recruit some ninth age players, I think. So he went to join the ninth age tournament because there's this initiative stat, right? So he charged a piece of chaff into an elite block of enemy, and then because the enemy fights first, he just annihilated the piece of chaff, and then he was like, why did I even bother charging? That was what he shared on his podcast a few years back too. And speaking about how clunky the game is, yeah, Warhammer 8th edition was my first tabletop game, and when I have assembled my army and played my first game with another fellow newbie, and our first game was the whole afternoon, I think 5 hours, and by the end of it, we're only on turn 3, and our brains were fried. We're like, what do I do now? You know, you hold the dice in your hand and you just keep shaking, and you're like, what am I supposed to do now? Because your brain is totally gone. You can't even comprehend what you're supposed to do next.
Every game of battle ever. Like, that's my experience as well.
When you're kind of 12 years old, maybe there's an attraction to that, that you can just get really obsessed by this thing because actually you don't have so much in life to worry about. But as as adults with stuff to do, it's pretty tricky. I mean, there was a few local guys were trying to get me into playing one of the old editions of Warhammer. Apologies, I don't remember which. Maybe 3rd. It was one of the popular ones. And I was like, maybe I could give it a try. And he was like, oh yeah, it's a great game. You know, and the way he was explaining it was basically, you spend the whole day, which is apparently a good thing, rolling dice with not very much happening, and then at some point the purple sun of Shyesh goes off and wins you the game, and that's the end. And he was trying to sell it as a positive thing, and to me this sounds like my nightmare. You know, there was the one game of Kings of War I had where I was trying to get a local guy in that went on for 5 hours or something. We didn't finish the game in the end, and bless him, he was a lovely guy, but I'm not going through that again. I'm really sorry. So doing that, you know, that is the game, then I'm, you know, it's not for me, it's fair to say. Good. So I mean, why do we think, Clem, go for it, buddy.
No, I just wanted to say my own experience is I started when I was a teenager, and I don't remember if it was 4th or 5th. I got one of those starters, and then over time, with the little money that I had as a teenager, I bought some goblins, some dark elves, and some chaos warriors. So those were the three armies I liked. And my own experience is I never actually got to play a full game because one, we didn't have enough miniatures to play.
No,
because they were too expensive. Like, you need to full metal army. It's like crazy stuff. And so we played with bits of cardboard, and it was a fucking mess. And also the rules were just insane, even as teenagers. Even if we had time to play it, we just like, after a while, we're like, yeah, just let's go do something else because it's too crazy. But I've always enjoyed the miniatures and painting the miniatures. And so I sold some of them, most of them, when I went to college. And I still have the leftovers from these armies. But playing the games has never really worked. Like, also taking the casualties out of big units. Like, I remember
the nightmare of managing to remove them and then pack them again.
It's like, why am I even bothering with this stuff? Anyway.
So why do we think this matters to Kings? I mean, of course, on the face of it, there's going to be a load of people that play Kings of War today that used to play a version of this game, right? So I think there'll be a lot of nostalgia. People will feel they were probably playing the old world, you know, Warhammer Fantasy when they were kids. And of course, we attach a load of significance to that, rightly or wrongly, right? It's, you know, He-Man, the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, whatever, you know. Stuff's always better when you're a kid, right? So that's definitely going to be a thing. Yeah, for me personally, I mean, we've touched on it a little. Sorry, Clem, go for it, buddy.
No, I just wanted to say, first of all, where does that thing come from, right? Like, isn't it weird that after just blowing up the whole universe, what, 5 or more years ago, they suddenly start doing this again? I mean, I think one reason is how is it called? Like, the video game where you basically play Warhammer Fantasy Battle?
Total War.
Right, has been quite successful, and I think in general video games is a huge industry. And so if Games Workshop manages to convert 1% of the Total War players to actually buy miniatures, for them it's a pretty good opportunity. But yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a huge part of it is the release of the video game. Yeah, I think that's a massive part, because that was released just after they had made the decision to blow up the old world, and then they got a massive following. So I think that's a huge part. And then there's a bit of a debate when the announcement was very strangely timed. Now, with Mantic's release of the third edition. Now, obviously, Games Workshop as a company are massively, you know, by a series of magnitude bigger than Mantic. Mantic's a micro company compared to them. But you have to understand, like, the mentality there. That's a company who took a children's author to court over a book called Space Marine the Dog. So it's well within the realms of possibility that the announcement was made around third edition. But I think primarily the decision was based around the video game, I think, is one reason why. I think knocking Mantic around a little bit had something to do with the release. And I think the other thing as well, there's a massive secondhand market in old models that on eBay and so forth, that's it's huge business. Like, so I think a part of it then is to tap into that side of it. They see that as a revenue stream that they're missing out on.
Paige, go for it, buddy.
Yeah, so timing it did come out, that announcement, just after the release of Mantic's third edition of Kings of War. Yeah, I don't play the video game, so when I went back to look at the dates where the video game was released, Total War Warhammer 2 was released in 2017. So the announcement was 2 years after Total War 2. But of course, there's been expansions and downloadable content through the months after 2017. And then Total War 3 was released in 2021. So the announcement being in 2019 is really suspicious to be timed so close to Mantic's third edition of Kings of War. And the way that they announced the return of the old world did not sound like they are catering to the video game crowd, because they were talking about, wouldn't it be interesting if we had what Horus Heresy is to Age of Sigmar, right? So their announcement was made more towards the tabletop crowd, because if I'm a video gamer, I don't know what is Age of Sigmar. I wouldn't know what's Age of Sigmar.
That's a great point, Paige. I mean, am I remembering this right? There was just a picture of a square base, and it was something like everything comes back round even squares. So
yeah, they
didn't have anything to show. Why would a video gamer? But also, it cost them almost nothing to do that. They didn't have to prepare anything. So if you hear Kings of War 3rd Edition is coming, it looks pretty good. Yeah, why not put that out now and hope people hold off? Tom?
Yeah, I think a huge amount of the video gamers, if they're just video gamers, they probably wouldn't, but an awful lot of those guys would be old Warhammer players. I mean, there's a huge kind of, if you go onto any of the forums on the game, they talk about that a lot, you know. So I think it does have part of it, but I would say the announcement is suspiciously timed around 3rd edition, you know, and they do keep an eye on it. If you think Ronnie Renton used to be, I don't know if he was the sales director, he was quite high up there. You know, there was definitely something going on there, you know, and it was, when was the announcement made? Kind of 5 years prior to the release of the game. They never do that.
Yeah. And to be honest, if 5% of the people that play the video game, it's probably a million players of the video game, or who knows? I'm making the numbers up, but it's a lot of people, right? If even 5% of them buy a Warhammer armor, you're laughing, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Like, you don't need to capture a big proportion of the video game players to make it worth it. But I guess you guys probably are right. Also, like, a good chunk of the audience, if the ones that are kind of getting older and used to play Fantasy Battle and have lots of disposable income, and they don't really like AOS, or they already have 5 armies with AOS, and what next do they buy? Well, we'll bring you the stuff that you loved when you were in your 20s, and you can keep giving us your money. Maybe that's a good thing.
Wait a minute, Clem. Is 5 armies for a game system a lot of armies for a game system?
I will make no further comment.
Fantastic. But I mean, I had a quick look at the sort of teasers of the rules that Games Workshop have put out. And, you know, for example, I was reading the movement one, and there's this idea that if you're in column formation, you can basically march faster than if you're in line formation. And you think about that and go, yeah, that makes sense. Brilliant. And then I think, hang on a second. So everyone is going to be starting off the battle in one formation. And at a certain point, their individually based models are going to have to change formation. And this is going to be in a rank and flank game with that many models on the table. And this is before anyone's even taken casualties. I just want to
be a bit pedantic. I think it's rank and file, not rank and flank. I think.
Unlike you, Clem. So unlike you. Yeah, oh yeah. Get our lawyers involved.
And if I'm wrong, then please insult me on the comments. Thank you.
I caught on to that too. Like, oh, you're going to reform in a different formation halfway through the game. And like, I think I've only played 8th edition, but most of the time when you write your list, right, you already know that, okay, this block of guys, they are most optimized at a width of 7 wide or width of 10 wide because you get to attack in 3 rows, if I remember the rules correctly. And then you just play as that formation throughout the game back in 8th edition. And then for them to say, okay, if you make yourself a long column, you can march triple your distance. But am I going to do that in the middle of a game? And like,
more to the point, is your opponent going to do that in the middle of the game? You know, and then undo it and then do it again. Who knows?
Like, what about the movement tree? How does it work with the movement tree? It's like,
I can't imagine doing that with goblins. I'd lose the will to live.
I'm going to lose the will to live playing elves. It's just, it sounds like a disaster. I mean, it's just not for me. And then, I really think we haven't seen the full rules. Who knows? But I really think a lot of people that play Kings of War will try this and they'll just go, do you know what? I love Kings of War. You know, I really think there will be a lot of people who realize how great Kings of War is and all the brilliant things about Kings of War that we just totally take for granted.
I think so too. I mean, will I get a rule book? I think so. might even be tempted by a starter, although I don't like Bretonians and I don't like Tom Kings. So I already know the starter will not be interesting for me. And also, those starters are not cheap usually, right? So
Clem, what I will be doing, sir, is buying two of them and leaving them in their plastic and forgetting about them for many years and then find them one day and then put them on eBay. Paige!
That's how you fund your children education.
Go for it, Paige.
Yeah, I just want to get it out there before I forget. So in this era where every new war game that comes out, they are all the innovation is in simplifying the rules and making it streamlined and elegant. So I was so surprised that they were to come up with this rule about reforming so that you can march faster. So it's like seems to be going the opposite of what every other game out there is doing, which is to streamline the rules. Yeah, and that's really very weird to me.
That's a great point, Paige.
In the article, they did mention that they played every version of Warhammer from 3rd to 8th, and then they picked the best parts that they liked out of it. But I think this is brand new. So they're adding a brand new rule that is even more convoluted. I'm like, that's really weird. And another point is that I think a lot of players love the lore of Warhammer. There's so much lore. And I didn't go very deep into it, but I remember I was told that even the map was similar to our real world map, the elves, where UK is, and then, you know, where the lizard men, that's where South America is, stuff like that. So, yeah, I think the lore is what's the main draw, and the old people who are so into the world of Warhammer Fantasy.
I think it's a lot about nostalgia, right? Like, you know the aesthetic, you know the style, and that's a big draw to it. But yeah, otherwise, I agree. I haven't read many stories in this universe that really captivated me. So maybe I'm not the best audience for it.
I mean, nostalgia is super comforting, right? It is really comforting. I've just recently rewatched all the Mad Max films because I love, you know, it's just, it's a tight, oh God. I mean, okay, I was, you know, 8 years old watching incredibly violent films, so perhaps I'm not as well adjusted as I might have been, but it's
you also have poor taste.
Yeah, poor taste in friends.
Yes, absolutely. I love these movies as well, so, you know.
Fantastic. Tom, what do you think? Not about Mad Max, about the old world.
About it coming back or about the old world in general? I always thought the old world, I found it an interesting setting, but it's very derivative of Tolkien and it's very derivative of historical kind of, you know, as Paige said, it's kind of based like without much hiding on the real world. It's not really like where Panathor is a little bit more kind of nuanced to it. You know, you have Italy, which is Tilia, you have Germany, which is the Empire, you have Britain, and it's very clear where all the countries are, you know. And I think a lot of the guys like John Stallard and stuff like that who were high up in the company, they were historical players. And the Perry twins, they're historical players. So they were bringing historical miniatures in originally, I think, to bulk up the armies. So there's a lot of that goes on. I think it's heavily influenced by that. But I think as a setting, it's a good setting. I think Mantic are well on the way to equaling that. It's whether people will accept that or not, because if your first war game that you discover at 15, 16, 17, you're going to be much more attached to that than something you find later on. You know? Like if they release a novel that's better than Lord of the Rings, most people won't accept it. Whether it's better or not better, they won't accept it. So I think as a setting, it is engaging for a lot of people. But I think Mantic are well on the way to equaling that lore because it's quite derivative. It's all quite derivative.
Even a couple of years ago, I would have said definitely the old world's lore is more interesting than Mantic's. But I really think Mantic have improved an awful lot. And it, you know, things like the halflings, as you say, Tom, it just seems a bit less derivative, a bit more interesting, a bit more unique, a bit fresher. And again, it's all derived from the same sources, but it just feels like Games Workshop paused theirs for a decade and now they've pressed play again. But Mantic have, you know, started from much further back. But, you know, the turtle and the hare, you know, the turtles just kept going, plodding out lore, you know. And so I don't think it's as compelling as it once was.
I'm Scott, aka Palette of War. Welcome to Mantic Universe Podcast, and check out my YouTube and Instagram.
But Tom, as the old, you know, GW employee playing with your army, and by the way, which army did you play, Tom?
I had the I had two armies. The first one I had was a Chaos Dwarf army, which was a massive old school big hat Chaos Dwarf army, which went missing somewhere along the way, and I've tried to find it, but it's gone.
I'd hate to tell you how much that'd be worth now.
I don't even want to think about it. And the other army then was an Empire army. So I had an Empire army when I worked in the store. That was my main army, and I had lost that, but I found it. I found it in my dad's attic. And then, like, which I think part of this is, we'll come back to the lore of the old world. I went about finishing the collection. So I ordered stuff off eBay and I tried to get bits and pieces that I didn't buy over the years to finish the collection. And I think that's a big draw for a lot of people, is to, you know, something that they collected, maybe finishing the collection where they didn't have the money at 18, 19, 20, or they have the money now and they're in their 40s or 50s or whatever they are. So I think that is a part of it. I think that'll play into it.
Absolutely. So guys,
I mean, also, sorry to interrupt. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. But I think the Games Workshop's plan is to bring back a lot of the old kits. Like, they will release some new things, like some new resin models, which isn't too exciting, right? And a few new plastic sprues, but not so many. And otherwise, just reuse old stuff that they used to sell and stopped selling at some point. So, yeah, for, as you just said, Tom, right? Like, everyone who couldn't buy them 10 years ago, maybe now has a better financial situation, and maybe that would be a draw into it for some people.
Guys, do we think Games Workshop is that bothered about this?
Because
I've seen, they don't seem to care about this.
I don't think so. I think there's a push coming from somewhere, and like I said, I think it takes a few boxes. But I don't think the games, you know, we're talking about the gameplay and stuff like that. I don't think that's going to have a massive effect on sales, for example. The games with Games Workshop, I think, are always secondary. They're a conduit to sell the miniatures. That's what it's there for.
They're a models company that also makes rules, whereas Mantic are a games company that also makes models, right?
Exactly. Like, the Games Workshop is run by the bean counters, it's run by accountants. So, like, that's the drive there. We're used to playing Mantic games, or we're used to playing Kings of War, where it's run by gamers. You know, it's run by gamers, and that's the drive. You know, obviously the miniatures are very important, but the gameplay is on a par. That's not the case with Games Workshop games, and it certainly isn't the case with the old world. But you shouldn't be, you shouldn't be under any illusions that that'll affect the sales. I think other things might affect the sales. The fact that this isn't going to be their main game, it's not going to be their main fantasy game. Age of Sigmar is going to be their main fantasy game. It's still going to be very big. It's going to be very big compared to what we're used to with Kings of War. You know, if you look at the forum, say, Kings of War Fanatics has, I think, 14,000 members. The old world already has close to 50,000. So it's, you know, however bad the game is, if the miniatures come out and they're you know, reprocessing old kits, which are of, like, some of them are very, very high quality. You know, you look at the Perry sculpts and some of the old kits, like, it is going to sell, and it's going to be a bigger game in Kings of War. But I suppose the question is then, is that a good thing or a bad thing ultimately for Mantic and for Kings of War?
That's a great question. Sorry, Paige, I know you want to speak, but I think that's a really great point, Tom, is already there's a load more people in this Facebook group, right, than we have in Mantic. But, you know, let's say, for example, 50,000 people join the group. They buy models for this game. They try the game and go, like I did when I played 40K, right? Oh, tabletop game. This looks great. I'm really excited. And then you play it and you go, I thought this was going to be more fun. Why am I not having more fun? And then a little bit later, oh, Mantic. Sorry, Paige, go for it, buddy.
Yeah, so when they announced the old world 4 years ago, and it took so long to develop even put news on it, if you look at all the older articles, there's like pretty much non-content. They're just speaking a little bit about the lore here and there. And then they were talking about Kislev, but it's not announced as an official faction now. And then they were talking about Cathay, and it's not announced as an official faction. So it's really confusing there. It's obvious that they didn't have much information on what the game is going to be like back way back then. And after that, it was announced that it's going to be a Forge World project. Now, I'm not very sure what that actually means, but
I thought Forge World literally last week ceased to be a thing. They've called it something else, but I guess it's
they
the same
tried
idea.
To merge into the main brand, I think, but internally they still probably have that what used to be specialist games and so on. And I think you're absolutely right, Paige, that they really didn't have much back then when I started to do the announcement. And so they just had basically the initial pitch and that stuff that was pretty close to the video game, because I think the Kislev and Katay factions, they are in the video game. They weren't in the tabletop version, but they were in the video game. And then later on, they probably realized, oh, well, we won't do 20 new plastic kits for two brand new factions. We'll start a lot smaller and see if it actually sells. I guess, I don't know. But so far, they haven't announced that much new things. That's my impression, at least. Like, yeah, sure, a couple of new sprues. How many new sprues does Games Workshop create every month, right? Yeah,
of different kinds of Space Marines. I mean, it doesn't feel like their heart's in it, if I'm completely honest. And after, you know, let's say, for example, Kings of War players, if you've been playing Kings of War and you're used to this clean, clear, slick game, are you really going to play this, you know, clunky game that goes on for 5 hours and go, oh, I could have played three games of Kings of War in that time? I mean, are you really going to, you know, stop playing Kings of War? I just don't. I mean, I guess some people will because of nostalgia, but is this really an existential crisis?
I don't think so. I think personally, yes, I will happily try to field some goblins and throw some fanatics at my opponent, because that was basically the only thing that I found funny. Or like the squig catapult. Yeah, okay, great. I love squigs. But will that change fundamentally what I play and what I buy? Definitely not. I mean, let's be real for a second, right?
So, Tom, what do you think? Are you going to buy into this, do you think?
No, as in, will I buy any miniatures?
I don't think so at this point.
I finished the Empire collection. Actually, it's up here in my attic in a lovely display case, and I'm pretty happy with that. So will I buy? I might buy the book. If the book comes out, it's good, and there's some good artwork, and there's some good painted miniatures and some good conversions and things, I might buy that. I'm actually in that Old World group, so I'm there to kind of have a poke around and have a look at what other people are doing. So yeah, I might get a few models. I might buy the book, but I can't see myself playing it after playing Kings of War. Yeah, and that was the only fantasy game I played up until Kings of War Second Edition came out.
Tom, but how toxic is that Facebook group? Just out of interest.
Which one? The Old World isn't too bad compared to some of the other ones. It's not too bad.
I mean, there's like, not much going on, right?
I think it's all kind of older, gentle.
Yeah, I think it's an older crowd. That's why, right?
And, you know, there's not many. Doesn't seem to be many kids on it, so it's respectful enough for a Games Workshop kind of group. It's not too bad.
Paige, what about you, buddy? Are you going to buy into it?
I don't think I will, actually. Sometime back, I've decided that I would only make Mantic armies, so even buying GW stuff for conversion, maybe an odd model or two, but not whole armies worth where I'm throwing so much money at Games Workshop rather than Mantic is not something that I plan on doing. So sometimes even when I see, wow, this is a beautiful model, but I'm like, I'd rather pay for Mantic stuff is what I'm
I'm pretty sure. You look at the pictures, hey, this Bretonian dude on a Pegasus or whatever looks great. Then you're going to see the price tag with 3 digits in euros. And you'll be like, okay, well, maybe next time then. You know,
yeah,
like,
but also, Clem, like, the models look nice. Do they look that much better than Mantic models? I mean, if that was, you know, I mean, I'm much more excited by the new Twilight Kin models than I am by those Bretonian models. I genuinely am.
I mean, I don't like Bretonians to begin with, so that's kind of a moot point. Otherwise, you have to admit that Games Workshop knows how to do cool models. I think I'll be kind of like Horus Heresy, right? Like, just don't ask the price. Like, if you have to ask for the price,
you're not their customer. Yeah, but they do make nice models, but also they're very often overly fussy, you know, too overly designed. You know, and that's some of them, yes, where Mantic, no, I think, makes a great balance, you know. Super. So,
I mean, yeah. Mantic models are better gaming pieces as well, right? Like, they're, again, really designed to be nice to paint and to play with.
And they're on their multi-base, not individually based, while you're changing your formation mid-game. Paige!
Yeah, speaking of the Bretonnian teasers, right? So I looked at it, it's like two plastic sprues and some resin heroes. So the plastic kits is basically the Lord on Pegasus and Foot Knights, right? The rest are resin. And then they ask you to buy all their old sculpts. So firstly, there's a huge difference in the aesthetic of the two new kits and even some of the new heroes compared to the old Men at Arms and even the Pegasus Knights, right? The scale.
Is it even the same scale, I was going to ask? Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, the Pegasus Knights, now that I look at it, the old ones, they look a little bit cute. They look like ponies compared to what you have in that Lord on Pegasus. It's a huge difference. So if you're asking new players to buy and then they look at the old Derpy Scouts and they're like, do I want to buy these? And then you're talking about profitability, right? That's why they squashed the old world, right? Now they're bringing it back and then they're like, okay, we got two new kits. Guess what? All the players with their old collections, they're going to come back. They're just going to buy a kit or two. How profitable is that going to be? And I mentioned as a listener question, right? Even the Twilight King release has more plastic kits, four plastic kits compared to the Bretonnians too. So Mantic being a smaller company, even their new faction release is bigger than the Bretonnian release.
Tom?
Yeah, how quickly do you think they'll ramp up though? I mean, that's the big question. So
I suppose, are they
going to have a stack of releases? I think a couple of things. If the real set comes out and it's a better game than Kings of War, Mantic are in trouble. If they have, you know, a decent game that's approaching the level of Kings in terms of playability, and their release schedule is good and the miniatures are reasonably priced, as in not three times the price of Mantic models, well, then Mantic are in trouble. I think if those criteria aren't met, there's huge scope for Mantic not only to, I think they'll grow from it if that criteria isn't met. So if they release the game, if Games Workshop come out with the game and it's brilliant and it's a better game or it's as good, it doesn't even need to be better, if it's as good, they're in trouble. I don't think that's going to be the case, though.
Tom,
two very unlikely
conditions. No, but he's made fantastic points.
It is very unlikely because their
incentives are different. And to be honest with you, I think Games Workshop could squash Mantic in a couple of months if they really wanted to. But honestly, I think Mantic Games is so small and the fan base is so small that it's just GW aren't particularly interested. And I don't think their incentive isn't to make a great game, right? Their incentive is to sell models. So I think Mantic will be absolutely fine. And I think in, you know, X amount of time, I think there'll be a load of disenchanted new rank and flank players who, you know, might find their way to Mantic.
I mean, I can definitely say locally, some old fantasy battle players, they've had a look at Kings of War, of course, because the rules are for free, and so you can check it out. Some of them even came to demo days or gaming days, but they're like, I like fantasy battle too much, and I know the old world is coming in 3 years, so I won't touch it. Like, seriously, I know a couple of people like this, and I'm sure there's a wider audience like this. Once the old world actually is there and they actually see the rules and they actually see the price of new models, maybe they will also change their minds, because the Kings of War is still there, and as you said, I think a lot of Kings of War player will not abandon it just like that.
Just very quickly, let's just touch on it then. So there are two other rank and flank games I can think of: Ninth Age and Conquest. Right, Ninth Age was made by fans after 8th edition, right? Which, after the old world was destroyed, this was a fan-made project. Thanks, Paige, Song of Ice and Fire. If I was playing that game, I would be far more worried than I am as a Mantic fan, because those guys expressly didn't want things to change. They wanted a crunchier game, whereas Kings of War is a much, much cleaner game. Conquest is again quite crunchy.
I think it's something different entirely, right? It's a different scale, there are different game mechanics. So I don't really think Conquest competes with Kings of War. I mean, you can't take your old fantasy battle army and go play Conquest, for example. That doesn't exist. And you can't take any non-Conquest miniatures and go play Conquest. That is not a thing. So it's kind of a captive universe and they have different mechanics. I played a little bit of it. Wasn't a big fan. Mostly I didn't want to redo another terrain set in a different scale.
Both you and I, Clem, bought a ton of stuff for that, got really excited, and then sort of like,
Yeah, I mean, there were some people trying it out locally, and then, yeah, I didn't really catch up, at least not within the local group here. And for Ninth Age, I'm not sure these people should be very worried, right? Because, yes, it's sort of similar. From what I understand, I don't know their rules very well, but I've had a quick look. It's very similar, but at the same time, they've also taken over, kind of like Kings of War has a rules committee.
So it's kind of become their own thing in the times.
Yeah, and also the incentive to write these rules is not anymore to follow the latest codex, which is has to have the latest shiny thing to sell models. Obviously, there are some small companies who create models for the Ninth Age and so on, but they are mostly passionate people, like one-man companies, and their incentive is not to sell tons of models, it's to make a cool game and something that they love. And so I think they're doing something different than what Games Workshop is doing anyway. So I'm not sure they should be too worried either. I really think it just brings in more people into ranks and file games, and it will probably more positively impact everyone rather than steal some customers, I think.
Tom?
Yeah, I think you're right, Clem. An example we have is, it's not directly comparable, but you have, there's an edition change with Dungeons & Dragons, and a game, it was a Pathfinder came in, and then they kind of rejigged the editions and greatly improved the game system, but Pathfinder is still happily ticking along. Like, it was created out of the rules change, but it's still there, and it has its own crowd, and it gets new players in. I think, like what I was saying earlier about a better game being released and a Games Workshop somehow selling models at the same price as Mantic, obviously that'll never happen. So I think you have that going for you as well. But even, you know, even if they did and it was approaching, you still have now a kind of a core of people who are fans of the game. I don't think anyone is going from Kings as their main fantasy game back to Warhammer. You know, but that example is interesting with Dungeons and Dragons, because they did exactly that. They produced, I think it was Wizards of the Coast, or the Hasbro, owned by Hasbro at the time, but they produced an edition that was, had made all the improvements that people wanted, and it still didn't really affect Pathfinder that much. You know, I think it's Pathfinder anyway. I can't remember the exact name of it, but that's
Sorry, we're losing you a little bit there, Tom. When the third edition of Age of Sigmar came out and they were selling off, they made too many of the starter boxes. So I bought one cheap, or bought two cheap, or whatever it was, and cracked that open, really excited. Wow, look how beautiful this is. And then I literally picked up the beautiful hardbound rule book, had a look, and just immediately, and I'm a very non-competitive gamer, but I was just reading this beautiful book going, my God, this is so broken. Like, why? And this is me after going to Mantic and then looking at this rule book going, why would I even attempt to play this? And I haven't. I've painted the models, beautiful models. Mantic make nice models too now, which are a lot cheaper. I don't see why I'd go back. I don't see what's in it for me, to be quite honest with you. Is there, guys, we've got listener questions to do. Are there any other talking points we think we've missed?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see like the Old World Facebook group with 50,000 people and Kings of War Fanatics at 13,000 people. Like, how much of a overlap are there? Because I do think that the Old World are attracting a different crowd, not the Kings of War crowd. I'm sure we'll lose some players, right? But then it's not going to be like a massive exodus of Kings of War players. But I think it's overall a good thing for Kings of War. Yeah, because as the old world prospers, there will be people that will be drifting towards Kings of War as well. And as our player base, Kings of War player base gets larger, then it makes it possible for Mantic to do more plastic kits, because if they are confident that my player base is large enough, that my plastic kits would sell enough to make back my investment on the tooling, then they could really churn out more plastic kits, which is great news for us, right? And I think this old world announcement has lit a fire behind Ronnie's ass, so he did churn out a lot more Kings of War stuff because of it. So that's an overall net positive for us.
Tom?
No, I'd agree with all of that. I think the crossover there, there's a lot of people who are on the Fanatics page or on all the old Warhammer page, but I think that's just down to you have so many of the older Warhammer players in Kings, and I think they like to dip back in. But where, you know, are you going to lose a whole load of them, you know, back to a Warhammer game? I don't think so. I suppose the other question is it going to affect the flow of new players coming in? But I think new players come in, they find a rank and flank game like Warhammer, and then a certain proportion of them will go on to a cleaner game system. It's like anything, you have a big kind of mass market product there, and then you have a smaller specialist, you know, more bespoke, finely tuned thing. Like in any area, the flow will come from the bigger group to the smaller group as people, you know, refine their tastes, I suppose.
Many of us have to go through the GW sorting hat, don't we? But it is, I mean, they always say, you know, when GW are doing well, the industry is doing well. And that's all the little guys. Clem?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm one of those people who's both on Fanatics and on the Old World group, because I want to just keep an eye on it. And I think it's not a bad thing for Mantic in general, for Kings of War in particular. But also we need to be smart and be engaged with this community a little bit, because as we said at the start of the episode, it's kind of like the elephant in the room, right? And so I don't think the smart way, or like the good thing to do it, is to kind of stay on our own turf and completely ignore what's going on there. And so I will definitely do a demo game, or like try it out and go talk to people who actually jump both fit into the old world, just to see, because I also like rank and file games in general, right? So I'm curious about how they've done it, and I already know lots of things I will have issues with, but yeah, there's curiosity with it, and I think keeping our door very open to these people is also an important thing to do. And I mean, Mantic plans to do a big push to hire new players. Well, there will be a bunch of people who will be exposed to tons of advertisements and tons of communication about, hey, how cool is it to have a big army with tons of miniatures in it and play epic battles? And yeah, these people are potential new customers for Kings of War as well down the road. So, yeah,
and if definitely. We're there with them, Clem, you know, if we don't shut ourselves off in our Mantic bunker, if we're there with them and they're going, huh, it's really frustrating moving all of these models like this. Oh, well, my friend, I need to tell you about
Kings of War. I have the solution. Yeah, have you heard about our Lord and Savior, Kings of War?
That's exactly
it. I mean, you should see the channels on the Discord server, the local group. I'm already in the discussion there, and I'm not the only Kings of War player there. And yeah, there are already some discussions like this. That's already happening.
I think, to be honest, there's nothing to be, as Mantic players and big Mantic fanboys that we are, there's really nothing to be frightened of here. I think there's opportunity here. Yeah, sure, some people might go and play it. But, I mean, honestly, just the way that you have to move your troops around the field, I just don't see large numbers of Kings of War players giving it up to go and do that. I just can't see it. Super. Right. Should we move on to some list of questions? We can do some summing up at the end, but I think we've covered it pretty well. So our friend who goes, our friend in real life who has a weird Facebook name, I'm sure it must be a reference to something, but I don't know. So our friend Manuel, who goes by Numer Solmalin. I keep meaning to Google that.
You've blown up his cover.
Yeah. So anyway, our friend Manuel, a good friend, are you talking about the new Warhammer? How come? Right, I think we've explained that quite well. We're doing well, right? So he would also love to hear a bit of any experiences with the old world editions. If yes, which one was your favorite and why? Which armies did you play? Well, I mean, again, we've sort of talked about that as much as we possibly could. And apologies, because, you know, that probably wasn't that interesting. So, Bill Curd. Hey, Bill. The new old world game sounds like it'll be as broken as every other game they release. So it's a big meh to me. I prefer 3rd edition Warhammer Fantasy Battle, but played properly with a GM and narrative. It was good because you could blend it with Man of War, Warhammer Siege, Mighty Empires, and have a truly expansive campaign. Something that we can do in our Kings of War with Armada, new Siege rules, etc. We only need a good set of campaign rules to save me fudging them from my old fantasy Warhammer set. Yeah, that's... yeah, more stuff for Kings of War. That sounds good. If it's going to inspire,
I think it's what they're releasing will be very different from what he's describing here. So yeah, I wouldn't expect too much of it.
No, and we already have all those
releases. So we already know we need to do that work for ourselves and yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we do for our weekends anyway, don't we, Clem? Fantastic. So Evan Porter asks, do you think a GW-driven revival in fantasy rank and flank would be a blessing in disguise for Kings of War, as it makes more potential players? Or do you think it would just pull model sales away from Mantic? Yeah, we very much addressed that. We very much, I think, see it as a positive thing, unless anyone disagrees. But, yeah, you know, it's the elephant in the room. But once you start to actually look at it and think about it, there's nothing here to be nervous about. So Andy Meacham. Hey, Andy. A rising tide raises all boats. If rank and flank interest grows, then Kings of War benefits with new players in the mid to long term. Model sales, that would certainly be ironic, considering Mantic's original sales plans. Yes, which I'm assuming what he's referring to there is Mantic was always kind of the mega blocks to Games Workshop's Lego. They're always sort of, a cheap and cheerful alternative that also had a rule booklet in there, just in case anyone asks any awkward questions. Paige Neo. Paige, do you want to read out your own question?
Sure, let me just get to it. Yeah, I think some of these things I've said earlier, but I'll just read it out. Is GW even serious about the old world ever since announcing it 4 years ago, which is very highly uncharacteristic of GW? I truly believe it was to disrupt Kings of War's 3rd edition launch. There's been a pathetic drip feed of information. I think a few months back they released that they're changing bases, and that's an article like, oh, we're going from 20 millimeters to 25 millimeter bases. Is that even a newsworthy piece of information? Well, and why would they release such information? Because they really don't have that much, especially a few years back. And yeah, with the latest Britonia teaser, a Lord on Pegasus sprue and a Foot Knight on foot sprue and some resins, that's it. They resell the old range. And the looks are very inconsistent. And of course, the quality, right? The newer sculpts are so much crisper. Even Mantic's Twilight King release has more new plastic. Yeah, furthermore, it's been relegated to a Forge World project. I think Forge World, they do specialist games. And if it takes off, then the main brand of GW will take it up. But if it doesn't take off, it will stay as a Forge World project. Yeah, I think they did make that announcement to counter Kings of War announcement, and it's not beneath them. We know that Mantic is a small company compared to GW, but yeah, but like Tom said, right, they take small companies to court, so this is not a big surprise that they will do something like this. Yeah, and maybe they are there to capture the Total War game crowd, but I think they regretted the decision and they're not confident that it will be profitable, so they're like, let's do some new sprues just a little bit and release it alongside the rangers that they have taken off for years, right? Bretonnia and Tomb King. So there's a higher likelihood that these people would buy. They don't have the old models in their garage, and they would buy some of these old models, and so, it hopes to stir up the Remember Berries.
So just to reference the South Park there.
This is the only podcast with the balls to do all the games.
So first thing is they're doing Bretonnia and Tomb Kings. Now, they are two notoriously overpriced armies if you want to buy them on eBay. They go for absolutely crazy money, and I absolutely don't think there's a coincidence there. I think in terms of the releases they're putting out, they've done the minimum amount of new stuff that they could possibly get away with, to be quite honest with you. And I think they'll see how it goes. I mean, Tom was asking earlier, you know, are they going to follow through with anything? What's the release schedule going to be like? I think at the moment, they don't know. They'll just push it out and see how it goes. And I think that really comes across with just how little they seem to be putting into this. And the other thing, which I think is interesting, is moving from 20 to 25 millimeter bases. Why do we think that might be? I think that's so you don't get your Empire army out of the attic to play. I think, oh, God, I've got to rebase the whole thing. Oh, they've got some nice new models. I'm buying a new army. I mean, why else would it be, right?
I mean, it also makes sense to just align the models next to each other because they never really meshed well before. I was curious because you guys mentioned the Facebook group has, what, 50,000 people for the old world? What is it for AOS and 40K? Like, is it actually a sizable audience for from Games Workshop's perspective, or not so much? Like, can we have a guesstimate of this?
That's a great question, Clem. And also, what's it like for the their Lord of the Rings game as well? Be interesting on 30K, etc.
Yeah, maybe we should have a quick look at this. My point is, maybe, as you said, Paige, like they threw this around 3 years ago and now they kind of regret it because they realized, well, people are not so interested into it. I mean, obviously, the game hasn't released yet, so maybe they will be a bit curious about it and see how it actually sells when it's available. But I don't know. I'm curious if it's even a big audience for them or if they expect a success from it or not.
I think the main four, I just had a look there, the main 40K page I could see is about 100,000 people on that. Yeah. But we got a feel for it now. We were in London. I don't think you guys were at the Clash of Kings in London last year, but it was in some big sports hall, but the size of 40K compared to everything else was unbelievable. 30K was being played upstairs beside us, but 40K dwarfed everything else put together. And I think that stayed that way.
Great. Right. Should we move to the next question? Clem, do you want to read out a couple? I've had enough of reading out questions at this point, as incredibly professional as I am.
I could do this, but Paige also found some numbers of sizes. So if you said, is it 1.5 or 50,000 people in the old world group? I might have misunderstood the number.
42,000.
So it is on a similar size to the Age of Sigmar Facebook groups. I don't know how accurate it is of a measurement of the popularity of it. But okay, so it's not tiny in comparison to their other big games. So it'll be interesting to see how much it actually sells and if we actually see tons of them on shelves in gaming stores and so on. All right. So next question, is that what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, I'm going to butcher it even worse than you, Chris, but I'll give it a try. Oh, Tom, you're a native speaker, so why don't you actually read it? It's playing the hot potato,
Tom,
you know?
Some of these answers seem to be more comments and replies to the question.
Do you notice how subtly Clem passed the buck there? So, okay, no worries, guys. So, Andy Meacham, so it's comments. Yeah, we're kind of reading out the comments. You will not be aware of the gargantuan gulf in income between the two companies. GW don't plan based on anyone else, let alone an addition change of someone else's game. Highly likely it was linked to the electronic game release around that time. Ockham's Razor, if anything else, full disclosure, I have worked for both companies. Hope that helps. And then it goes on to say, Warlord draws down up to 5 times what Mantic grosses on a year. With GW, it's over 100 times. Yeah, I mean, I believe those numbers. Yes. Clem and I went to Warlord Games, and I 100% believe they do 5 times the numbers of Mantic. Sure.
I think, isn't it even more than 5 times? And I think it's even more than 100 times.
I can believe
it. I mean, just on the number of employees, right? It's just...
What's Mantic, 26? Something like that.
I think they're up to about 30 now, yeah. But they're still listed as a micro company. So they're much smaller than Warlord even.
Okay, fantastic. So, and then Andy Meacham. Hey, Andy, thanks again. Has also come on with saying, I'm getting mixed up with Total War 3, I think he means, which was announced in 2021. They discussed Cath Inc. His love mentions at one point. Anyway, the main thrust is that there's a vanishingly small chance that Kings of War 3 had anything to do with the announcement. Yeah, we talked about that. I because they had so little to show. I'm not convinced that's true, but anyway, we've discussed it. I enjoyed Andy goes on, I enjoyed Warhammer Fantasy Battle 6 through 8 edition through tournament, though tournament gaming exhausted me, so I swerved them. Eventually the local scene splintered because everyone was practicing for the next tournament and one couldn't pick up a game. This due to the tournament pack variance and point limit fluctuations. Kings of War was a breath of fresh air and was light enough that I started attending tournaments. I wasn't getting drained and the community was terrific. Yeah, I think we can all agree with that. 3.5 and a fluctuation in points at tournaments. I'm on hiatus with Kings of War. The more focused support for model ranges has been apparent recently is heartening. Looking forward to dipping back in 2024. Great to have you back, Andy. That's great.
I played him in 2019. I played Andy. The last game of Clash of King 2019. He's a great.
How did it go?
I did win it on the last round, but it was very close. But he's more important than that. He's a sound lad. He's a really, really nice guy. Yeah.
Fantastic. And then apologies, dear listener, another very long post, but we really wanted to get people's input. Clem?
Just wanted to say, just reminds me, like his comment, that Kings of War was a breath of fresh air. It's funny because I remember very precisely when I first discovered Kings of War, I had the very same impression. It's like, oh my God, this is what Fantasy Battle should have been all along. Like, how did these guys mess it up so badly? And these new guys can get it so right, so it's interesting, and I think there's a lot to it.
Oh, it was me playing, you know, in my 30s, getting back into tabletop gaming, and I played 40k because everyone played it, assumed it must be good. Painted up my Drukhari army or Dark Elder at the time, really excited. Played with a work colleague, and he just shot me off the table in two turns. So, and at the end, I said, "What could I have done differently?" And the solution is buy different models, buy a different army, and okay, but I like this army and I'm excited. And, you know, and me being me, I kind of internalized that and I was like, God, it must have this must be my fault somehow, you know. Maybe I don't know what fun is, you know, but it wasn't. Yeah, you know, I distinctly remember that sort of confusing feeling of, I thought this was more fun. How is this not more enjoyable than this, you know? Right, so next question, Sean Clark. Hey, Sean. I don't see what has changed for GW since they've been Warhammer Fantasy Battles. The thing that caused Warhammer Fantasy Battles to fail was the huge commitment and therefore cost of building even a single unit. In 8th, you'd see units of 40 or 50 models. That's not far off an army in AOS or 40k. I realise they've said, oh, well, won't be a beginner's game. But I can't see them limiting the attraction to a portion of Grognards, which is us. Grognards, wanting to recapture their youth. It's the Grognards who will most likely have the disposable income to afford it. The typical 14-year-old who GW normally target and rely on, there's a new horde of 14-year-olds every 12 months, can't afford it, or their parents will refuse to spend so much money on it. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. It looks like unit size will be smaller, but you can bet that the cost is still going to be an issue. Basically, the old world confuses me. I think on the short term, at least, it could be seen as an existential threat to Kings of War, a mantic by virtue of fear of missing out mentality that most of us gamers have. In the longer term, it remains to be seen, all of which isn't a question. But thanks
for participating.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that. There we go, guys. Yeah, so it's... I don't think anyone is predicting doom and gloom, surprisingly. No.
Not really.
No, I think the opposite. You know, I think you have something, you know, that's going to bring new players in. And like that, I think anyone who is in a mixed gaming group, you know, where people are playing it, play them in a game of that, suffer it, and then get them to play a game of Kings. And once they play Kings, you know, you can even get them to use their new old world models in Kings of War until they get a Mantic army.
Fantastic. So do we have any final points on the topic then?
Yeah, even my local player, he was very excited about the old world initially, and at this stage he's like, it's like, what's this drip feed of little non-information, and he's not very confident that it would succeed even. But that being said, I think even the old world will be a boost to our Kings of War player base at the local game store, because there are a bunch of players at the local game store who only plays GW games. And then when Old World hits, inevitably they will dip their toes in it. And if playing that, it opens them up to the world of rank and file, rank and flank, right? And then after that, they might consider the alternative of Kings of War. Whereas now, if they're playing Age of Sigmar and 40K, it's a world of a difference from playing Kings of War. So I think it's best. It's overall a good thing.
Tom?
Yeah, I think the other thing maybe that we didn't touch on is, like, if it isn't a success, now I think a lot of this stuff is going to be made to order and things like that, so they won't be under the same pressure that, let's say, 40K or Age of Sigmar is under. But if it's not a success, they'll have absolutely no qualms about axing it again. You know, now it's not going to happen in a year's time, but it might happen in 5 years' time or 6 years' time.
It would be very funny, though, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah, it'd be hilarious. And then you have another batch of players as pubs come
out. They blow up the old world again. They say, no, we're forward enough in time and it's the end times and we've blown up the world all over again.
I think if it happens, it'll fizzle out because they've done that with other games before. They just stop release and stuff. They ignore it and it goes away. But I you know, that's not outside the realms of possibility. I think they'll give it a run, you know, but I think 2, 3, 4 years down the line, if it's not selling what the accountants want it to be selling, they'll have no problem putting a line through that, save the costs and focus on the core games, because they've done that so many times. And this isn't like, it's not like cancelling Warhammer Fantasy Battle again. It's like cancelling, I don't know, whatever that 50mm Inquisitor, was it the Inquisitor? Like, it's one of their
that's side. That's a great point. Quests, that's a great point. Because, of course, when they cancelled it the first time, it was one of their two main games. Okay, it was a lot less successful than the other one, but now it's nowhere near that. So the embarrassment of closing, or the danger of closing it, is surely much reduced. Yeah, great.
And I think if they do it, they won't announce it. They won't blow up the world like they did before. They'll just let it fizzle out. They'll release one or two releases, and because they've done that before with games, so they'll there won't be a space for a kickback, because it'll just slowly die on the vine.
Clem, last thoughts. Sorry, Tom. Sorry, I interrupted you, buddy. Can you finish off?
No, I pretty much finished.
No, I agree. I'm curious to see what the actual release schedule will be. Obviously, they are already right now working on the next 6 months or 12 months of releases, right? Because they have kind of a long lead time to get stuff ready. But I think once they do the first quarter of sales with the old world, they will plan, is there a wave two or not? And it very well could be, nah, fuck it, like, why would we bother? Or, hey, sure, let's keep occupying the space, but we keep it with 2 new sprues per release, not 5, not 10, and we just keep it on the side, sort of alive, like on live support, and that's it. And as you said, it's just a business decision at this point anyway, so.
Yeah, I quite like the look of Rune Wars, the miniatures game, which was, you know, made by Fantasy Flight, the same people that made X-Wing. And it was kind of a weird love child of X-Wing plus a rank and flank game. But what I liked about it was you had these sort of movement arcs and things like that. And it looked really cool. And you had these hidden dials. So you secretly give all your units an order so they can march or they can charge. And so there's a certain amount of bluffing. And the models were kind of good enough, I would say, but they weren't. You didn't need to build them, basically. They're kind of occasionally they're PVC plugged into things, but it was very, very easy. But yeah, I mean, the game lasted for roughly 2 years. It didn't make any money, and Fantasy Flight just pulled it. You know, and that's what happens when you have shareholders, that if something isn't, you know, washing its face, it's not going to last. And it's nothing personal. That's just how it is, right? So, you know, if we think these companies, and actually Mantic is different because Ronnie owns Mantic, if we think companies with shareholders are anything else, you know, that's on us, to be quite honest. Clem, any Paige, Tom, any final thoughts before we finish the episode? Tom, did we answer your question?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything, yeah.
And just a bit of feedback, Tom. So, obviously, we're doing MUP Shorts, where we're obviously trying to engage, you know, listeners and, you know, friends of the pod, etc. How was it as a general experience? You asked your question on the Facebook group. You came on the pod. You were too polite to say no.
Yeah, not intimidating at all. No, it was brilliant. Yeah. And like I said, I said to you before, a great fan of the podcast. And I think it has its own niche. You know, it's not... hyper focused on the competitive elements of the game. I think it hits the spot. You know, I think there's a few podcasts now, Kings of War podcasts, that all have their own little niche, and I think you guys have found a great spot. You know, anyone I've talked to who's listened to it, and I think getting the word out there is the big thing. But anyone who's listened to it has been raving about it. I think it's an excellent hobby podcast.
Thanks. So I didn't say that to get a compliment, but of course I'll take
you were
it.
That wasn't the
No, I was trying to say, dear listener, come on, you know, get your
Come on in. Absolutely. Like we're happy to have listeners join and be part of a community. Like as Chris mentioned several times, we started this just to have a chat, him and myself, and we're happy to have other people join in because we all love those games and we're all having a good time discussing toy soldiers and the good times we're having with it. Sometimes more competitive, even if we suck at it, sometimes more narrative or other aspects of it. But yeah, the door is wide open.
And I would say the fun as we go on is, it's still, the game is still great, but when I got into this, it was all about the game, right? Because it's fun times. But as time's gone on, it's more like 50% or more is the people, and the people you meet, the friendships along the way, you know. And that's, as time goes on, we're actually probably playing less games, but I'm actually having a much better time, an even better time, you know. So dear listener, please feel free to come on the pod. Yes, you're more than welcome to come on a Mup Shorts. Paige, anything to finish with?
Yeah, a lot of people we talk about, we play Kings of War because of the people, right? But it's also the game system that attracts the correct people, to the right people to come together. So there's a lot to be said about the game as well. That's bringing the right people together.
That's a great point.
It's no coincidence that great people are in the system. I think that's a very good point, Paige.
Fantastic. Okay, guys, I think we've covered it pretty well. Cheers, guys.
Chris, you have muted yourself by mistake.
Thank you, buddy. So
you can redo all of that sentence. Start from right after Tom said hello.
Will Fred edit this?